Silence is commanded.
Please be seated. Well, this has been a wonderful day for us. We've had a full house at every single hearing that we've had. My notes tell me this afternoon we have Lake Mills High School with us. Would the students and their advisor please stand? Please be seated. Well, we'd like to have you come and visit. Were you part of the group that we talked at lunchtime? I thought you looked familiar. So, all right, very good. Well, I hope that you're finding a lot of interest in hearing oral argument, and I know that you've had an opportunity to look at the materials that's going to be argued here a little bit later on. So welcome to the Wisconsin Supreme Court. The third case of the day, State versus Randall. Counsel, are you prepared to begin?
May it please the court, I'm Assistant Attorney General Michael Sanders representing the state of Wisconsin. Randall drove drunk. A blood test revealed a BAC of 0.210. When she was arrested and the officer requested a sample of her blood to test it to determine what she had in her blood in terms of alcohol or drugs, she agreed and said yes and gave it to them. Had she refused, she would have lost her license. So she said yes, and she got to keep her license. But then days later, when it was too late for the police to get a search warrant to get her blood or any other way to get that evidence of her intoxication, she withdrew her consent at the lab so that the lab couldn't run the tests on it. To deprive the state of the proof that she drove drunk. It's a great scheme. You can drive drunk or on drugs. You agree to give a sample. Then when it's too late, you can withdraw your consent, and you can just do that again and again and again, and you aren't going to go to jail. The state's not going to have proof. And it works all the time, not just in this type of a case where she drove drunk, but it would work if you drove drunk or on drugs and hurt someone or even for an OWI homicide.
Counsel, what's the difference? I mean, the argument of relative impunity that you make causes great concern.
Good.
And good, he says. Okay. But if she would have, at the outset, refused, of course, the penalty for refusal is you lose your license for, I forget, how long is it?
It depends on if it's your first, second, third.
Okay. You lose
it's
your
a third
license,
in this case.
But the state still doesn't have, of course, the evidence of your BAC. So why not just treat this as a refusal? Because it's a refusal to give consent to test. That's the penalty that's imposed for refusal, which is consistent with refusal now that hasn't caused the sky to fall from the heavens over Wisconsin. You know, I mean, it's workable.
Well, it's not the same thing, though, because if it's a the first thing is that the way that the law works, it's not clear that you could mark this as a refusal with the way the law works now.
Assuming without deciding.
That you could?
Yeah.
I don't think you can, but okay. If that's the case, even, what the state wants isn't the chance to revoke. What it wants is the proof that she drove drunk. And if you think about it in the context, not of this case, but had she hit someone and killed them, what the state wants isn't to revoke her license. It wants to be able to show that she drove drunk, and the result of that is a death.
And
we're not going to get that out of a refusal sanction. Excuse me.
Is refusal civil or criminal?
That's a civil sanction.
Okay, so someone could avoid criminal liability altogether.
Absolutely.
If they choose to refuse after consenting, after the fact, and after the evidence is gone.
In this case, yes.
So it really eliminates the opportunity to prosecute someone.
Absolutely.
For drunk driving, criminal offenses, and for, let's say, homicide by intoxicated youth.
Absolutely. It would make that extremely difficult, let's say.
And can you think of any other scenario where the state is relegated to a civil ticket for refusal because a defendant can control whether or not the state has its evidence?
No.
I
can't.
And follow up. Sure. I'm still kind of perplexed because if she had refused from the get-go, you wouldn't have this evidence.
Well, no.
Well,
sure, but had she refused from the get-go, there is no doubt that what the state does then is request a warrant, and it gets one, and it gets the blood. But now the state didn't do that because she said yes, and the goal of the law is to get consent, is to have them say yes so that we don't have to get a warrant and we don't have to do a forced blood draw. In what the state wants and defendant should want too is not a forced blood draw. But when the cop says, do you want to do this? If you say yes, it's easy. It just works for everyone.
Right now, the law is, let's say we have a really egregious potential criminal charge, with homicide, death, I mean, bad facts. Right now, the law is, will you consent? She says, I'm paraphrasing.
Good.
And if she says no, then, okay, you lose your license for a while, and now we're going to go and get a warrant to draw the blood.
Sure. Right? Mm-hmm.
And the impediment that you're talking about is the impediment you're talking about then, your concern about dissipation over a period of time?
Well, that would be one. Well, yes, because if you wait for days, then you ask for blood, it's not going to show 0.210 because it's been days. And what she wants is not only that we cannot, or that she, not only that the lab can't test it, but she says that the lab either has to send it back to her or throw away the only proof which shows that she drove at 0.210.
That deals with remedy.
That's exactly what the defendant's asking for.
I know. I'm not. That's the next step in my mind. But I'm not at remedy.
Sure.
Yet. But how do McNeely and Schmerber enter into your position? And that's why I asked you: is your concern then about the dissipation of time? And what did McNeely, both McNeely, which kind of was a sea change with regard to getting a blood draw, and Schmerber on top of that, and talked about how unique blood, how intrusive to the body integrity drawing blood was, and so that you needed a warrant, and the whole idea of...
You don't need one if she says yes.
Pardon?
And you don't need one if the defendant says yes. While that case may have been a sea change in certain aspects of the law, it was not in terms of implied consent. The court said, we love implied consent. And here she did exactly what she ought to have done. When asked, she said yes. But then after that, she withdrew once it was too late.
Let me just clarify this so that I know that I understand the record. You can withdraw your consent, right?
Until the blood is drawn, of course.
Before the test, you can withdraw the issue here.
If by test you mean the withdrawal of the blood from you, yes.
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 So it's not that 100%. You can say, yeah, I said yes, but I really didn't mean it. I don't want to go through with that.
Oh,
and
no,
then you pursue getting a warrant or deal with exigent circumstances or some other thing that we don't have to deal with.
Yes, yet. Absolutely.
But if you go ahead and say yes, and then you proceed and you take the test, and everyone relies on the fact that you said yes, and then you followed through with your yes, the issue here becomes whether you can later say no once the evidence is essentially gone, and then remove that evidence from the ability of the state to use it.
Yes,
right?
That is exactly it.
So it's not that you can't withdraw your consent. It's
no,
just
and.
When.
Yes.
That's what this case is about?
Yes. And as the court said in Sumnicht, once the blood is gone from you, it's too late.
Counsel, can I get you back to the legal framework here? Because we've been talking in ideas of what the ramifications would be, and while those are important, just from a legal framework, is what you're asking us to accept is that the search is a search until the blood is taken, at which point the search is completed?
Yes.
And then the evidence is seized in a way evidence would always be seized for purposes of testing?
Yes.
So that the withdrawal to consent can only take place prior to the search?
I missed the last part, I'm sorry.
Prior to at the end of the search, withdrawal to the search can no longer take place.
Right.
Okay, so having said all that, is there some limit? Because now this evidence is her blood. Are they, now that it's seized, can they test it for whatever they want to test it for?
No.
Okay, and why not?
Because the law says we want the blood to run a test on it to determine how much alcohol and drugs you have in you. And that's it.
So the search is limited to the purpose of the search, which is
yes.
The testing for alcohol and drugs.
Yes, and if the state wants to do more than that, I don't know what it would want
DNA,
to do. Absolutely not.
Okay.
If the state wants to do that, most likely that is going to be unreasonable, and the state would have to show why it can do that. And I would say I can't think of any way that the state could use this for that or for HIV or for anything like that without it being an unreasonable search.
How does this legal framework comport with the Van Lerhoven case?
It's the same idea. Once it's been seized from you with your consent, so once you have consented to the search, it comes out of you, it's been seized, and because it's been seized under Van Lerhoven and Rydell and Patron and Snyder, the state now has the ability to run a test on it to determine if it's what the state thought when they asked you for it, because they had PC, you drove drunk, or after having used drugs.
Thank you.
Sure. So if the defendant is right that she has a reasonable expectation of privacy in the blood once it's at the lab, what that would have to mean is that When the state wants to use it for just that, to determine if it has alcohol and drugs, and if so, how much. But she also says she wants it either sent back to her or thrown away. What that would mean is that since she doesn't want it back to go back into her arm. So the only thing she has in it, if we're not going to test it for more than those two things, is that she wants us not to have evidence. There isn't any other privacy interest in it. That's it. And that can't be one that society is prepared to recognize as reasonable. It's just a way to drive drunk all the time and not go to jail and not pay for it. There isn't really anything else.
Do you know, or does, and most importantly, does the record reflect that when you search for THC or OWI in the blood, that you don't see other things? Those who are doing the analysis, I know what they're searching for, but the question rises in my mind, what else are they seeing? What else are they observing?
It's not in the record, but from what I know of how the lab works, which isn't...
I suppose I better stop you then.
Okay.
If it's not in the record, okay.
Yeah. I don't think it is. Mm-hmm. I would answer, but if that's not appropriate, I will refrain. In the whole time that we have had implied consent laws, which in Wisconsin is from 1970, in the U.S. it dates back to 1949, I have not found a single case where this type of thing has worked ever. She cites no case where this has ever worked until this case. It doesn't work because it doesn't make sense. It is just a way to deprive the state of what it needs to prove that you drove drunk or on drugs. There really isn't anything more to it. And there is a reason that it's never worked till now.
How does the Riley case decided, Riley versus California, decided by the United States Supreme Court in 2014, affect our jurisprudence in this case?
It's not the same thing. A computer or cell phone are not like blood. And one thing is one that you raised that I don't want to talk about at length, but when you look at one of those, it's hard to just look for what you want to see. So what the court has said is there is so much on a cell phone and there is so much on a computer that if you go in to look for proof of one thing, you're going to find everything. And that doesn't make sense.
And that is a concern, a privacy concern. I mean, and what blood can show isn't just my concern. You take it right out of the Schmerber court's decision. Blood certainly implicates privacy interests. And I don't need a Supreme Court case to tell me that.
It can, and that's why the state can only test it for those two things. And it's not two, actually. It could be more. It's because in terms of drugs, there are lots of drugs, and they can run lots of different tests to determine which drug you might be on. But the law says it cannot test it for anything else, and there is no evidence that if you run a test to find out drugs, you're going to find out more than just drugs. So I don't think there's really any kind of a privacy interest in that way.
Well, I don't know. I may be unreasonable, so
possible.
Check that one off. But I think reasonable people have a concern and a privacy interest in their blood. I think that's not unreasonable. And for me, in part, the question legally here, and I say this with a smile, is blood akin to a cell phone or is it akin to a purse? Because we have cases that clearly say you can, you know, go through the purse. And I don't know the answer, but I know that whether or not my response is a reasonable and generally accepted response, Schmerber says it is, but there are real implications of privacy if someone takes my blood.
Well, there are some things here. If you don't want them to take your blood, you can either not drive drunk, or when they ask for blood, you can say no. But once you give it to them, you have told them you can now use this to determine if I'm drunk. And it's not like a cell phone or a computer because you don't want it back. You're not going to try to stick it back into your vein, which is completely different than a cell phone or a computer where once it's been searched, you still want it back because it still has all those things on it. And it's really difficult in the case of a computer or a cell phone to determine, to look for only one thing and not find all those things. In this case, it's not, as far as the record reflects, it isn't difficult to search for only alcohol or to search for only drugs. And we cannot search for anything more because of the statute. And because when when the request is made, what you're told is we want to get a sample to test it for the to determine if and if you have alcohol and drugs in your system, and if so, how much. And that's it. So it is self-limiting in that way. It's not even the same as a search warrant, where it doesn't necessarily say exactly what it's going to be, what they are going to test it for. Here it's clear, which is why we should have an implied consent law, and it should work, and it offers a protection to a defendant that the defendant isn't going to have in other contexts. If there are no further questions,
thank you.
Shall I proceed?
Yes, please.
Okay. May it please the court, my name is Adam Welch, and I'm here representing the respondent, Jessica Randall. I would like to start out by just responding to a few points that Mr. Sanders made. Mr. Sanders indicated that after Ms. Randall revoked her consent to the analysis of her blood, it was then too late for the state to essentially do anything about it. The state can't get a warrant. The state can't treat this as a refusal. With all due respect, that's completely false. There is absolutely no reason why the state couldn't apply for a search warrant, why they couldn't have applied for a search warrant the day they received the letter.
Can you remind me what the timing is in this case? I think I have the wrong timing in my mind.
Yes, ma'am. The arrest happened on, I believe, October 29th of 2016, the blood obviously drawn the same day. I believe 2 days later, Ms. Randall sent a letter revoking her consent. The state concedes the letter was clear and unequivocal, so there's no dispute about the contents of the letter. Then, a couple days after that, the lab indicated that they had received the letter, and then the testing was done on November 7th. So,
can you think of a context where a search can occur? I know they can be later challenged because the consent wasn't voluntary, or there are a variety of things. But can you think of a scenario where a search occurs, it is completed, and after the fact, the person can withdraw consent?
Absolutely. There are a number of examples. I've cited some of them in the briefs. But there are lots of examples. For example, if a person turns over business records pursuant to consent, and then the police or the government are searching those records, and they demand those records to be returned. Case law holds that those have to be returned to the person.
Okay, how about if I come to your house, I'm law enforcement, you consent to me coming in, I find cocaine on the front table, I seize the cocaine, I put it in evidence. Can you then say a few days later, oh, by the way, I don't consent?
No.
Give me that back.
No, you cannot do that. Okay. The distinction there is that in that situation, there's two things that have come into play. One of those is plain view, the plain view doctrine. And the other thing that's come into play in that scenario is that a person doesn't have a privacy or possessory interest in something that is obviously contraband.
Well, it's not obviously contraband, though, right? So you go into the house, you see a white powdery substance in a bag and packaged in the way that cocaine is normally packaged. You don't know it's cocaine. It looks like cocaine, right?
Correct.
Okay. So you're not going to know it's cocaine until you do the chemical analysis, isn't that right?
Correct. So I think
so,
the...
Yeah, so hang on.
Oh, I'm sorry.
So just to follow up on Justice Ziegler's example, you get consent to come into the house, you see it in plain view, you say, I think that's cocaine. You seize it, and then you walk out the door, and the homeowner says, oh, by the way, I've revoked my consent to search. Give me that back. You don't know it's cocaine yet. So what do you do?
Well, under the plain view doctrine, in that scenario, what you have is something where the incriminating character of that cocaine is apparent. It's apparently incriminating. If it wasn't apparently...
You can develop probable cause, right? You can look at the surrounding circumstances and say, yeah, that looks like that's probably cocaine.
Right. In the court's example...
Is that a yes?
I'm sorry. I didn't hear the court's question.
Yeah. So the reason that you can hold on to it and go test it is because at that point you've got probable cause to believe that might be contraband, right?
The reason you can hold... So mere probable cause isn't enough to detain evidence. What you need is probable cause and something else. So in this case, in this example, what you'd have is probable cause plus the plain view doctrine coming into play.
Well, the plain view doctrine gets you in the house and looking at it, yeah?
Correct.
And then you see the thing and you go, I think that's cocaine. And so I'm going to take it. I don't know that it is, but I think it is. So I'm going to take it and I'm going to go test it. So what I want to test here is... whether the homeowner can say, no, I revoke my consent, give that back, versus the driver, for whom you have probable cause, because otherwise you're not going to be getting the blood draw anyway, right? You've got pulled over for OWI, and the person says, yes, you may take my blood. And at that point, isn't that analogous to having the bag of cocaine and saying, well, I don't know if this is cocaine, and in this instance, I don't know that there's alcohol in there, but either way, in both cases, we need to do a chemical analysis to figure that out, right?
I think a cleaner example to...
Well, address that one first.
The difference between a blood sample and Your Honor's example is that the white powdery substance in Your Honor's example is being seized with some basis other than the owner's consent. In other words, it sounds like what you're saying is if the homeowner allows the person into the house, so the search of the house is being conducted pursuant to consent, and while that lawful search is being carried out, the officer finds cocaine and then seizes the cocaine. Now, it sounds like what Your Honor is saying is that the homeowner did not explicitly say, yes, go ahead and take this white powdery substance. I give you my consent to take it. But rather, what you're saying is the homeowner consented to the entry of the house, and then the drugs or the suspected drugs were seized pursuant to plain view.
Yeah.
So I think those are different situations.
Well, let me line it up for you then. So the police say, can I enter your skin to get some blood? And the driver says, yes, you may. So now he draws the blood out, and now the blood sample is in exactly the same posture, I think, as the bag of cocaine that the police walked out of the house with. They both acquired those through the consent of the owner, and they both have to be chemically analyzed to see if there's anything amiss.
Yes, although I think analyzing it under the plain view doctrine, I think you would have a stronger case for the prosecution in the white powdery substance that appears to be packaged like cocaine than you would in a blood sample. Looking at a vial of blood doesn't tell you anything about the blood's contents.
But the driver's actions do, right? So they got pulled over for OWI for a reason. Yeah? So we're just looking at different things that tell us that there might be prohibited substances at play. In the cocaine, we look at it and it looks like cocaine, so we figure, let's go test it. In the OWI context, we look at the driver's behavior and we say, that looks like alcohol-infused blood to me. And so we pull it out and test it. What's the difference?
I think the difference then comes down to if you get past the plain view question, the difference comes down to the reasonable expectation of privacy. And I think the only thing the powdery substance is going to tell the police is whether it is cocaine or whether it is not cocaine.
Didn't Birchfield dispose of the question of reasonable expectation of privacy? If you are pulled over and arrested for OWI, you no longer have a reasonable expectation of privacy in the quantity of blood in your system or quantity of alcohol in your system, right?
I don't believe that that is what Birchfield held.
Birchfield said... Birchfield addressed the difference between blood draw and breathalyzer, right?
Yes.
And Birchfield said that as a search incident to arrest, you can do a breathalyzer without consent and without a warrant. Why? Because you've lost your expectation of privacy in the amount of alcohol that you drank.
It does reach that holding with regards to breath tests, but with regard to blood tests, the Birchfield decision actually contains some language that recognizes a legitimate expectation of privacy, not just in the piercing of the skin.
I might beg to differ here. It is, they said that in the context of the intrusiveness of a blood draw as opposed to a breathalyzer test. Said nothing about the difference in expectation of privacy in the amount of alcohol in your system. That's gone.
Well, Your Honor, what I would say is the Birchfield decision discusses things like the anxiety that a person would feel in the information contained in the blood that it could be analyzed. It talks about...
unrelated to alcohol.
Right, in medical information and things like that.
Because you don't have any interest in privacy in the amount of alcohol after you've been arrested for OWI, right?
I disagree with that. I think you do retain a reasonable expectation of privacy in the analysis of the blood. I don't think Birchfield...
Where does that come from?
I would cite to Skinner versus Railway Labor Executives Association.
I'm sorry, what?
Skinner versus Railway Labor Executives Association. So in Skinner, they were discussing both urine tests and blood tests. When discussing urine tests, they bifurcate the discussion. They talk about the collection of urine, you know, watching someone urinate to collect the sample, and they also talk about the analysis of the sample. And they talk about, specifically, that the analysis of urine, like that of blood, can reveal a host of medical facts about an employee, including whether he or she is epileptic, pregnant, or diabetic, et cetera. So they're talking about two distinct interests there. They go on to compare that to blood as well. The Skinner decision talks about, quote, it is clear that the collection and testing of urine intrudes upon expectations of privacy that society has long recognized as reasonable, and then it concludes that we agree these intrusions, in the plural, must be deemed searches under the Fourth Amendment. They're talking about it in the plural. They're talking about multiple intrusions into a privacy interest, which means multiple searches. So in the Skinner decision, which as far as I know remains good law, it's from 1989,
right.
They're talking about those as two distinct things.
Yeah, but that conversation was in the context of the authority of taking it to begin with, right? Not in what you do with it after you have it in hand. Yes, there's a privacy interest in it beforehand because it's in your body. But once that's disposed of, either through a warrant or exigent circumstances or consent, it's gone, right? Skinner, I don't think Skinner says otherwise.
Well, Skinner didn't reach that specific question.
Right.
But if the only issue is the collection of the sample and then your interests cease, then I don't know why Skinner would have included all that language.
Well, Skinner's got to talk about that in the context of what does it take to get authority to take the sample to begin with, right?
Correct.
Okay. So Skinner comes to the unremarkable conclusion that you have a privacy interest in your body fluids, and then therefore you have to comply with Fourth Amendment prescriptions to get a sample of it. Well, we're beyond that here. We have the sample. The question is whether you continue to have a privacy interest in what's in the sample once it's taken. And that puts us back in the cocaine in the house context, doesn't it?
Well, I think I've distinguished that already, but I agree with your general point, but I think I think Skinner is very clear, and I think it has to be, that we do maintain a reasonable expectation of privacy in the contents of our blood after it's been drawn. I don't think that just goes away. The state's position here is essentially once the blood is out of your body and in police custody, we can do whatever we want with it because you no longer have a reasonable expectation of privacy. It's no longer a search.
I don't think it's quite that broad, but...
Well...
I think he was very clear saying that you can run tests for alcohol or other drugs for which you had probable cause to arrest, and that's why you could ask for consent to begin with, right?
Well, Your Honor, in this situation, Ms. Randall revoked her consent to testing. So there's no consent at play here. What the state is claiming is that they don't need consent, and they don't need a warrant, and they don't need an exception to the warrant requirement because the analysis of the blood is not a search. It doesn't implicate the Fourth Amendment, period.
Well, no, I think that they say it was a seizure. And in fact, there's another Court of Appeals case that says once they have the blood, it's a seizure. And that was quoted, I think, in this Court of Appeals decision, but the words was changed from seizure to search in the decision.
They're not claiming that the analysis of the blood is a seizure. They're claiming the analysis of the blood is the examination of seized evidence. So what they're saying is, as long as the evidence has been lawfully seized in the first place, it can be analyzed without implicating the Fourth Amendment. And the state's position that the implied consent law somehow limits the state's ability to analyze it to only analyzing alcohol and drugs, that's not true. There's nothing that would... So, for example, if they took Ms. Randall's blood and they did a DNA analysis of it, there is nothing in the implied consent law that would prohibit them from doing that. There's nothing anywhere in the law that would prohibit them from doing that, because the only thing that prohibits them is Ms. Randall's reasonable expectation of privacy. If they're saying they have no reasonable expectation of privacy because it's not a search or a seizure, it's just an analysis, which is a non-event for Fourth Amendment purposes, then there's nothing in the law that prohibits them from doing DNA testing, doing medical testing, pregnancy testing. There's nothing that would prohibit them from selling all that information to a third party. If there's no Fourth Amendment right, there's no Fourth Amendment right, period.
You think the statute is broad enough that would permit the state to test anything on a blood sample?
No, Your Honor, this has nothing to do with the statute. The statute is not...
Well, you said there's nothing to restrict them. I think that the
correct.
State has some confines on what they can do.
The confines are the Fourth Amendment, Your Honor.
Well, I think they're confined otherwise as well.
But there's nothing in the statute that confines them to... Well, let me rephrase that. Okay. Once she's withdrawn her consent, the statute is out the window. We're not operating under the statute anymore, because what we're operating under here is she has revoked her consent under that statute. It's a refusal. So at that point, their authority for testing this is to claim that it's not a search or it's not a seizure. It's a non-event for Fourth Amendment purposes. They can just do it.
Counsel, perhaps a way to bring a little bit of succor to your position might be this. When a person gives consent for a search, it is done within certain parameters, right? There is, one can say, for example, you may come in and search my front hallway, if nothing else. And the police can go nowhere beyond the front hallway, right?
Correct.
And when the person doesn't explicitly identify where you can search, you identify the scope of the search circumstantially.
Yes.
Okay. So when a person gives consent to a blood draw, the circumstances tell us that she is giving consent to search for alcohol or other drugs in her blood. Yes?
It's more than the circumstances. That was explicitly what she consented to.
Okay. So your concern is that the state might take that sample and start searching for other things and selling data to third parties. But that would be beyond the scope of the consensual search, wouldn't it?
The consent that she provided has been clearly and unequivocally withdrawn. That's no longer...
Wait. Getting ahead of me. So let's stick with this first. The scope of her consent was to have the blood drawn to search for alcohol and other drugs, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So if she doesn't withdraw her consent, that is as far as the state can go in searching that blood sample. Correct.
That's my opinion, but based on the argument the state has presented in its brief, I don't know if that's true, because they're claiming that the analysis of blood isn't a search or a seizure, period. So if the court were to adopt the state's position, I'm not sure that they would be limited that way.
All right. So if we did constrain the analysis to that, and I'm willing to bet the state's going
to the scope of the consent.
Yes. And I think the state's going to say, yeah, that's what we mean, and that's just fine. So if we did that, then your concerns are taken care of, aren't they?
In a case where the consent has not been revoked.
Okay. And also in a situation in which the subject tries to revoke consent, because the scope of what they can do is still limited by what the consent was, right?
I don't see how that follows, Your Honor, with all due respect, because if she made an agreement with the state, then she revoked that agreement. So that's not in play anymore.
Yeah, so let me put a finer point on it. And at the risk of tipping my hand on this. I don't think she can revoke her consent after the blood is drawn. The search is complete. It's just a question of analysis. It's the same thing as in State versus Patron with the undeveloped film. Right? You've got a canister of film that's not developed. You've got a vial of blood that's not analyzed. And in each circumstance, what you're going to do, the whole point of the exercise of getting the samples in the film canister was to see what's in it. And so you don't get to say, don't develop my film. You don't get to say, you don't get to look at my blood. Right? So the subject may desire that the state does not do anything with the blood. And even having expressed that desire, still the state can only search it for alcohol or drugs. Isn't that right?
That's what the statute says, which is what I was trying to point you to before. If you look at 343, 305, the law is for the purpose of. I mean, it's very clear what the state can do with the blood. They can't just run a test on your blood for anything they want to run it for.
So, to respond to that, if Ms. Randall, sitting in the room, had said, I do not consent to this testing, period. So she had never agreed to it in the first place.
Correct.
And then the state somehow got her blood anyway.
Well, the state got a warrant, and they still are constrained by the statute on what they can do with it. It says, for the purpose of, you know.
That's if she consents to it, though. So.
No, it says that under the statute for taking blood.
Are you saying if
blood.
They get a warrant, they right. can do more with it?
No.
Well, the warrant puts us in a totally different context because the scope of the warrant is defined by the language of the warrant.
Right.
So, again, if you get a warrant, you're not under 343-305 anymore. The scope of – if she has revoked her consent to testing, the statute is no longer a meaningful limitation because it's not – being if she revokes her testing under revokes her consent under 343-305,
right.
and the state goes ahead and tests it anyway, they're not testing it pursuant to her consent, and they're not testing it pursuant to the statute. Their claimed authority.
Well, they would be testing it pursuant to implied consent, perhaps under subsection 2.
They're not testing it pursuant to implied consent. What the state is claiming here is their authority for testing is that it's not a search, it's not a seizure, it's not a Fourth Amendment
well,
event.
I think what they're saying is you can't break your consent into two parts. Once you've given your consent to withdraw the blood, that's the end of the investigation. I think that's what they're saying.
I think that is part of what they're saying, but I think in that case what they're saying is out of sync with a long-standing tradition of U.S. Supreme Court case law. Going back to, you have State versus Jacobson, which is the search of a container. You have California versus Riley, which is the cell phone case. And these cases have breaking up a search and seizure into multiple components. You have the initial seizure of a box or a container, and then the court saying, no, you actually need to get a warrant to search that container. You have a cell phone, the court says you need to get a warrant to search the cell phone. So it's not correct to say that we can't break up a search or seizure into multiple components. We do that all the time.
But her consent would mean nothing. Her consent would mean nothing if she can consent to the blood draw and it occurs, so the blood is now out of her body. If under your theory, that doesn't mean anything.
No, of course it means something. What it means is that the state was able to collect that evidence without having to wake up a judge in the middle of the night and get a warrant.
Well, it's worthless under your theory because you want to suppress it all.
Absolutely not. It's not worthless. They still retain the blood sample, and when they receive notice that she no longer consents, they can, during business hours, obtain a very simple search warrant from a judge.
No, you can't. 2 days later, and when they got the thing at the lab, it was 4 days later. I know you want to say, well, you can dial back to what her blood alcohol level would have been. Well, that's just silly. You're not going to get someone to sign a warrant when the blood draw was 4 days old to search the blood that's out of a person's body based on some kind of probable cause that you can. I mean, I just don't understand your argument at all.
I fail to understand how you couldn't get a warrant under those circumstances. The blood's preserved.
Are you saying the state could extrapolate back in some sort of curve? If you're 000, 4 days later, you must have been
right
above the legal limit four days previous? I'm not getting that.
No, Your Honor, once the blood has been drawn, it's preserved. It's mixed with preservatives when it's drawn. It's stable.
That I understand. I'm not quarreling with that, but she's saying you – You've already searched. You got my blood. My blood is sitting there, but you can't test it. I'm withdrawing consent for you to test it, as if you have to have consent to search to get the blood and then a secondary consent to test it that could always be withdrawn even 4 days later. And I hear you saying that it's okay because the evidence is still there somehow in her blood.
Right.
Get a warrant and get new blood.
No, I'm saying get a warrant to test the blood they already have. Just like
if what would the theory be? If there's no consent to get the blood, I mean...
Okay, so she consented... She consented to provide the blood sample. It's too late for her to take that back. The cops have the blood, okay? So if the police go to a judge and they say, Your Honor, we arrested Ms. Randall for operating while intoxicated. Here's our probable cause to believe she was intoxicated. We have in our custody a preserved vial of blood. We would like to test that for drugs and alcohol, please. A judge would probably sign that, and then they could go test the blood.
Okay.
You would need two warrants for every blood draw.
Right.
You'd need a warrant for the cocaine testing after you seize the cocaine and put it into evidence.
Right.
You'd need two warrants for every case.
That's absolutely not. You would need one warrant.
What's the probable cause for the judge to sign off on testing? What do you mean you need one warrant?
Okay, if Ms. Randall had just refused from the get-go and the police had gotten a warrant to draw her blood, and that warrant says you may draw her blood, you may test it for the presence of alcohol or drugs, one warrant, boom, we're done with that. Okay, in this situation where she consented to the collection of the blood, there's no warrant needed
for
that.
You still need a warrant.
You would need one warrant. There's no circumstance where you would need two warrants unless you screwed up the first one.
Just like okay. you would still need a warrant.
For the cocaine.
For the cocaine.
Yeah, to test it.
You would.
If the cocaine was... I think plain view would come into play there, but if the powdery substance was seized solely pursuant to the homeowner's consent, and that homeowner then revoked consent, I think it would be fair to say that they might need a warrant there, if plain view doesn't come into play.
What's your best authority for that second step in obtaining a warrant to test the substance that is already in the custody of the state?
I'm not sure I understand the question.
A case. Has any case in the entire United States ever said any law enforcement agency needs a warrant to test cocaine that they found pursuant to a consensual search?
Not that I'm aware of, but I think in most situations, plain view would come into play. In other contexts, there are plenty of cases. There are cases involving computers, cell phones, business records, sealed containers, portfolios, all sorts of things that... where the courts clearly say that a warrant would be needed to continue the search after consent has been revoked.
Well, the blood sample's in pretty plain sight.
I understand your argument now much better than I did before, so you've done a good job, I think, in presenting it. I have to think through it a little bit further.
Once seized... Blood is taken. And it's lawful. Are you saying that it was not lawfully seized?
I'm saying the blood was lawfully seized and then Ms. Randall revoked her consent.
Yeah, that's what I understand you're saying. So once it is lawfully seized, what's the justification for returning it?
So... I think the question to ask is not what's the justification for returning it, but what would be the government's justification for keeping it?
It could be, but let's try my version of the question.
Let me,
you can answer your version, too.
Let me start out by saying this. The state cited to United States versus Chadwick in its reply brief on this topic. And that case does contain a proposition that the police may detain evidence to prevent its destruction. So they can temporarily hold evidence to prevent its destruction. And I think the important thing to note there is that in Chadwick, what they talk about is they can detain evidence while the police are getting a warrant. So if what happens is a person revokes their consent to search something, and the police are like, oh my gosh, I don't want to give this back, we got to search this, and they send someone to get a warrant, which again, in a case like this would take 20, 30 minutes tops, I don't see any reason why the government can't hold that blood temporarily while getting a warrant. What we have here is we're over 2 years after the demand to return the blood, There is no sign that the state has tried to get a warrant here. And so what we have is a situation where the state is basically saying, we can keep this blood indefinitely. And I think that's where we run into problems. I don't think that the state can just permanently keep an item that was seized solely pursuant to consent when that consent is no longer valid.
But the state keeps all of the other samples of blood that were lawfully seized. Why can't they keep this one?
Well, if blood was seized pursuant to a warrant, say there was a refusal and a search warrant, and the blood was seized pursuant to the search warrant, and that search warrant was litigated and declared to be completely invalid, so it was an unlawful seizure of the blood, I think in that situation, the government would have no rights to keep that blood, just as if my car was unlawfully seized and I successfully litigated that.
Let's have the more common, and that is that people give consent, and they give consent, and there's withdrawal of blood, and then there's the testing of blood. And although it causes me concern out of government holding all of this information on all of us, but nevertheless, there seems to be no question raised that I can see here or elsewhere that the government doesn't have the right to, at this stage, to keep the samples of blood that have already been subjected to testing via consent.
If there is unrevoked consent to the blood sample, I think there's no question that the government can retain those samples.
So my shuddering at this prospect is really just kind of blowing in the wind because it's already being done en masse. What's the problem with one more? I mean,
my red light is on. I can respond to that, but my light's on. So.
Can I get a response? What's the problem with one more?
The only comment I would have to follow up on that is if the state is correct that there's no reasonable expectation of privacy in the information contained in those blood samples, the concern that I have is not so much that the state has those, but that the state can do things with them, such as develop DNA profiles or develop other information. And under the state's theory here, no person would have standing to come into court and challenge that because they have no reasonable expectation of privacy in those samples.
Yeah, I think that you might look at the statute, though, if you had that problem, because I think you'll find some guidance in the statute that I mentioned before. Thank you.
Thank you.
And now I have to ask you, because now it's bugging me, but it wasn't before, does the statute constrain what the state can do with a blood sample that's drawn under the circumstances that her sample was drawn?
Yes.
And what does it do?
It can look at it to determine if you have alcohol and drugs in your system, and if so, how much.
And what
that's the extent.
I didn't hear the last part. Alcohol.
If you have alcohol and drugs in your system, and if so, how much. That's it. If the state wants to do anything else, we are not saying that you would not have an expectation that we aren't going to do anything more.
Okay.
The state can't.
The informing the accused statute informs specifically tell the person in words that are given that the law enforcement agency now wants to test one or more samples of your breath, blood, or urine to determine the concentration of alcohol or drugs in your system, and then it goes forward. Mm-hmm. It doesn't say we want to determine if you're pregnant.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And the law then says who can test it, how it can be tested. It's a whole law that explains all of it. It's all there. We can't do anything else with it. If we did, it is very likely going to be unreasonable, and the state can't do it. To be clear in this case, what the defendant asked for in when she wrote to the lab, she said, she hereby advises the Wisconsin State Laboratory of Hygiene that she does not consent to any person or entity retaining her blood sample, and she therefore demands that it be returned to her or destroyed immediately. So that's exactly what we are talking about here. It's not that with what she said when she tried to revoke consent, she didn't say, you can then, if you want, you can still get a search warrant. She said, I want my blood back, so that you can have no evidence that I drove drunk. That's exactly what it is. And in her brief, sub 2 is the state violated Randall's Fourth Amendment rights when it retained possession of her blood sample after she revoked her consent. So she's not saying you can keep it and still have, and then have like two shots where it could somehow, if the state changed the statute, you could have a refusal and still get the blood to use in court. She's wanting it back. And she wants it back so that we cannot prove that she drove drunk. That's the only possible reason, and that's not reasonable.
The statute that's been referred to, 343.305, deals with the purpose, as was referenced, and it deals with alcohol, controlled substance analog, or any other drug, which I mean to be illegal or not illegal, controlled or not controlled. How do you interpret, or any other drug? What does that encompass?
There's a list of drugs and what they can... I think there's a list of drugs and what they can test for. And there are only some of them that would count as a restricted controlled substance or a restricted controlled substance analog, so that's what they're testing.
I may be missing something. I'll hold my right hand up and confess error. But 5B says as follows... Blood may be withdrawn from the person arrested for a violation of an OWI or similar offense as prescribed earlier in this statute to determine the presence or quantity of alcohol, a controlled substance analog, or any other drug, or any combination of alcohol, controlled substance, or any other combination of alcohol, controlled substance analog, and any other drug in the blood. So I just want to know what any other drug means.
Honestly, I don't know, but it's not to test if she's pregnant or if she has HIV or anything like that.
I don't know.
It's nothing
this
along those lines.
Authorizes the test of any drug, whether it's controlled or not controlled.
I do not know, unfortunately. But I don't really think the state wants to... What the state wants to do with it is determine if there is a drug in her system which would allow them to prove that she drove while with a restricted controlled substance in her system. So really what it wants to know is if it's something which is going to count under the law. And that's all it's testing for. If it tests for anything more, it's not going to be reasonable.
Well, but why does that, what does it mean? Or any drug?
I don't know. But if the state tests for anything other than what it can use to prove that she violated this law, it isn't going to be reasonable. But that's all it's going to do. This is like the white substance. It's that in this case, her claim is, You found a bag of what looks to be coke. I just want it back now, which is not reasonable. It's never been reasonable. As I think has come up, no court has ever held that, and no court has ever held in this type of a case that once you give a blood sample, you can have it back, or that you can stop the analysis to determine if you drove drunk or on drugs. It's never happened in, as far as anyone can tell here, ever. In any court ever until this circuit court and this appellate court. And it's a one-judge case, and it's exactly the opposite of what the court said in Sumnick, and it doesn't make sense, and it's not reasonable.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you both for very interesting arguments. It's an interesting question. The more you talk about it, the more wiggles you see on the edges of the issue. So the briefs were very helpful as well. We are going to adjourn now, and the court will meet in closed conference at 5:03. We are adjourned.